Welcome to the Cultivating Business Growth Podcast, bringing you bi-weekly discussions designed to help you grow your business and create the lifestyle you desire. Elevate your business with proven strategies from virtual CFOs, CPAs, and business advisors. We discuss real-world challenges solved with actionable steps that get you the results you need, both in business and building the life you deserve.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us for episode number 140 of the Cultivating Business Growth Podcast, brought to you by PJS & Co. CPAs. I'm your host, Megan Spicer, and today we're bringing you a fantastic guest that I think you all are really gonna love. So we are going to kind of tackle the question, what strategies can help build 2 years of a relationship into a few weeks, which I know is a big ask, but Rick Watson is gonna help us tackle that today. How are you, Rick?
I'm super excited to be here, Megan.
I'm very excited to have you. I want to give a little bit of background and then I'm going to ask you a little bit of question about that as well. But we have you as a scale to exit guru who helps estate planning for law firms, general accounting firms, financial advisors, insurance advisors, and business brokers to strengthen and grow their businesses by integrating systems that foster growth, improve culture, and strengthen their value to maximize their exits. You're also the founder of the National Referral Network and the author of A Firm Worth Building, Running a Better Professional Business, which has so much good information in it. And I actually heard you first on the Law Firm Growth Podcast with Jan Ruth. And that conversation was fantastic. And he overall just has a great podcast. So if you have a law firm and want to learn more about growth specifically for your law firm, check that one out. But Rick, tell us a little bit about how you got here, just a broad brush
of brush.
Your background.
So first of all, we run a financial advisory practice. And as part of that, we work with a lot of attorneys, accountants, a lot of smaller professional businesses. And what we realized really quickly was a lot of them great people in what they do, but poorly run. And so we started translating some of what we learned about running our firm into running these firms. I think that the things in the book are really universal to all businesses. But what surprises me all the time is how, like, accountants want to be accountants. They don't want to be, we were just talking about that. Accountants want to be accountants. Right. They don't want to do the other stuff, right?
Yeah. No marketing. I don't want to do any,
That's right. Exactly right. So this is a consistent problem in service-based businesses, or the term we coined was advice-giving professionals really struggle in this. But it's, you know, if you own a construction firm, it would be the same problems.
Know what you know, and you like operating in that structured area, right? If you're familiar with something, it's very uncomfortable to go outside your realm of, like, I'm a marketing person. I hate doing my taxes. Like, I've worked with CPAs for 9 years and I still have so many questions. And it's just not my realm of comfort. So I totally understand it.
Exactly. So particularly, I think if anybody who's got advanced education, law, accountants, then they particularly want to stay in their doctors. They particularly want to stay in their specialty. And that they don't appreciate is that they make their lives harder by not paying attention to the other stuff. And so you see accountants who want to get rid of their clients. They're like, oh yeah, this year I have to get rid of a third of my clients. Well, for a marketing person like yourself, you're like, what? No, it's the opposite direction. But that's how they maintain control of their company, is how many clients they get rid of every year. And I just think that is backwards, right? Let's fix the underlying problems, build on a solid foundation, and then scale.
Right. Well, and this is such a hard thing for so many people, even people in sales. You know, building relationships and referrals. I feel like when you're first starting out in sales, you read all these books and you have all these processes and all of these things, and people tend to forget that you're just connecting with other humans. And I think that's a big part of what I was picking up on, what's in your book and the conversations that I've listened to on other podcasts that you've been on, is it's so focused on those relationships. And we're humans are funny. There's a weird psychology about us humans. So there's a lot that goes into what you focus on and the referral network and all of these things that you've built.
Yeah, I just think that you're right. It is all based on humans. And I think a lot of times another problem that happens is people get so focused in their specialty that they forget that at the end of the day, they're all about their specialty and they're not about understanding that they're really problem solvers. That's what people want solved. It's not their taxes. They want to get the IRS off their backs, or they're right. Not, you know, estate planning attorneys. And when we get them to see themselves as a part of a larger set of problems, then they can solve problems outside of their specialty. And that's where things like the National Referral Network and things like that become very active. And we do a lot of coaching. So to finish the question you asked me in the beginning, which is how do we get started with this? We started coaching these professionals on how to get referrals. And the first thing we had to do is get them to stop being about their specialty and start being problem solvers and help people no matter where it went.
Right. That's huge too. I mean, I think people have such a tunnel vision about the problems that they want to solve or think they can solve. You know, we're kind of self-limiting in, well, that's a problem I just don't even know how to touch. So I think that's key too. I mean, that's huge.
There's a great line that we use that says, we teach people to say, which is, I'm really good at what I do, taxes or whatever. I'm really good at my specialty. But what I'm even better at is connecting myself with really smart individuals, other people. And all of a sudden, the floodgates open up because now you're not about one thing. You're about all these other things. And then back to the point that you made, it's about relationships. Right. So now how strong is that relationship? What are you doing to strengthen those relationships?
Right. Right. And that kind of ties in to my first question about related to referrals, but this term edification. So I had never actually heard this term before. So I went on the Google machine and got the technical definition. So if something is done for your edification, it is done to benefit you in some way. For example, by teaching you about something. But you talk about this in kind of a different light. And I like how you relate it to building your network and the referrals.
Yeah. So we're all about inventing language in our firm. So there's lots of things that we come up with, terms that don't exist. And I think it's hilarious when people try to look things up that we've defined because we want to be thought leaders. And
right.
It's just interesting. So our take
now
on edification.
I'm going to have to pull where I got that from.
Yeah. So let me just say that. Edification, the way we define it, is about lifting up others to some extent at your expense. I think that humility is a really powerful way of edifying others. But when you say, I'm good at what I do, but there's all these other things, but I surround myself with people who are smarter than me. Mm-hmm. Whoa, that's pretty cool. You just edified all these other people. So the thing about edification is it needs to be conscious. And in the accounting and law, a lot of professionals, they want to be who's in charge. And so they tend to de-edify the people around them, the opposite. So the accountant will say, hey, I'm going to refer you to this financial advisor. If he doesn't return your phone call right away, you know, just keep trying him. You just cut his legs out from under
him. Yeah, that's not the greatest intro.
Right. Or they commoditize them. So they'll say, hey, I'm going to introduce you to an accountant. Great. Now he's like every other accountant in the whole world. And my six other friends have told me about accountants. They didn't say, so when you edify someone, you start with a little bit about, like, I'm going to send you this amazing accountant. Love them. They're just great. And let me tell you a little bit of story about him. So you have to attach it to a story about anything, about the fact that they love to fish, or you guys had this great experience where you guys went to a baseball game together. It doesn't matter. It's some way of attaching uniqueness to that individual versus a commodity. And there's internal edification, which is your staff, how you edify them. And then there's external edification. How do we edify? Like if I'm going to make a referral externally, I've got to build up that accountant or attorney. We want them, we call it downhill skiing, right? It should be easy, not hard for them. They shouldn't. And it's one of the first questions that we'll ask when we get a referral. We'll say, what did Bob say about me?
Yeah.
Because if they say, oh, he says you're a financial advisor. Great. I'm going to have to go back to Bob and we're going to have a little talk.
And, hey, about that.
They might say, well, he says you're not very good at returning phone calls. That's a problem I'm going to have to go talk with Bob about. But right. If they say, Bob said that you're amazing, that he just trusts you implicitly and, you know, told me a little story about your horses. And all of a sudden, I'm like, Bob's doing his job. This is great.
Yep.
And so.
Well, you think about it and it's so straightforward. And like, why do we remove that in business when we would do that in any other personal relationship? If we're introducing a friend, you know, to another friend, we're doing that just naturally. You know, I'm talking my friends out like, this guy's great. You're going to love him. You know, he does this and this. We met at this. Mm-hmm. So why do we remove that all of a sudden when we do business with people? It's just so silly that like we as humans think, oh, that's not professional. I can't talk about like, you know, we met, you know, doing jujitsu together or what, you know, whatever it is. It's just silly.
I agree with you. And we use that as a way of teaching a lot of times where we'll talk about someone's sister. If I was going to introduce someone to Megan, I was going to introduce you to my brother. Mm-hmm. I could say, this is my brother. That's okay, I guess, but it's not great, right?
Right.
I could say, my brother, you know, he's kind of a womanizer, but, you know, that I de-edified him, right?
Right.
Or I can say, you know, I want to introduce you my brother, sweetest guy in the planet, right? And I just, you know, I'm so proud of him, whatever. Tell a little story about how he's doing in business or whatever. Yeah. And I think the answer to your question is why do people do that? It's because they want control. They want client mm-hmm. control. And so they make sure they're the only one left on the mountain. And the problem with that is that now you can't scale because you've made yourself the most important person in the room. So nobody wants to deal, like your clients don't want to deal with the least important person in the room. They want to deal with the most. And so you need to not de-edify yourself. You need to be humble and push others up. And now you're unlimited. I can continue to push an accountant, an attorney, a financial advisor, an insurance, whatever, right? I can lift a bunch of people up and that helps me to scale.
It kind of ties back into that abundance mindset too of, hey, they're not, you know, we can all be great. We can all be great at our own thing. Just because this person's great over here doesn't mean that I'm not, you know, because we as humans, we have that competitive thing in our brain that, oh, I need to be the best. I got to put them down, you know? And we have to learn to not do that. It's almost like this natural instinct that we're fighting against when we're fighting that, you know, that tendency to say, oh, I'm the best at this or, you know.
But I agree with you. And we do something else there, which is, so it's great if you edify other people. That's wonderful. But then to do it properly, they edify you. It's a trust relationship. So, and I don't mean when they make an introduction to somebody else. I mean with that specific person. So Megan's great, but I refer a client of Megan's to somebody. And that person should say, by the way, I know Megan made this introduction. I just have to take a minute and tell you, she's freaking awesome. Isn't she amazing? Well, you could say your own praises all day, but if the person you just introduced someone to, right? Just to take the brother analogy, if that brother turns around and says, oh man, Rick's just somebody you know, I'm so proud of him, right? You can essentially build yourself up in a ladder where you're going up the rungs together.
So
in the eyes of somebody else.
Yeah. Cause I mean, obviously you can take responsibility and have those conversations and do all of this yourself, but how do you make those connections with those referrals and say, hey, I want you to introduce me in this way? Like that seems almost like an awkward conversation. Like, hey, don't just leave it at this. You need to like brag about me, okay?
Right. Well, so the simple answer to that is you both join the National Referral Network. That's one way. And then we coach them to do that, right? I think that, you know, we started this concept, this idea of centers of influence, right?
Oh,
and it's the people that you have around you. So it's the accountant, the attorney, the other people in your sphere. We took that concept and blew it out to on a national level and then set rules so that we all can play nice on the same sandbox, right? Kick people out when they're not playing nice, et cetera. So, but how would you have that conversation? I think the way we do, we talk about, hey, we want to build this and whether it's local or national, right? We want to build this, and there needs to be some rules of how we play with each other. So I'm happy to make introductions to you, but I'm telling you, I'm going to ask them, but when you introduce somebody to me, I'm going to find out how that introduction was made.
Right.
And we're going to see whether that flies, you know, is that a positive experience for both sides? I think part of the problem that in most referral networks, and I go into this from the book, but that most of them are one-sided. So you make a bunch of referrals, you never get anything back, and then it dies.
And then it peters out eventually, yeah.
I can imagine, to your point that you said earlier, can you imagine if we treated each other that way in personal relationships? I guess we do. That's what happens. And then those relationships fall apart.
Yep. Yep. I mean, that's a great point. I want to now kind of take the conversation in a different direction as far as the trust compression, because this was another really big component that I think is very interesting. And there was a couple of, again, psychological components that you talked about as far as like the meeting times and the number of meetings that I thought were very interesting in this. So you have experience in building up trust faster. That's what this trust compression is, or that's what I understood it to be. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, you're right. 100%.
And I think this is something that, especially for these, what did you call it before? Advice giving professions? Mm-hmm. Is that what you called it?
Yes.
Because we're taking on as a CFO or as an attorney, or, you know, this is sensitive information that people are very stressed about in some cases. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to gain that trust from somebody who just maybe found you on Google, which again is why you want this referral network. But when paired with the referral network and somebody that's singing your praises and then this trust compression, I mean, this is like chef's kiss for sales, right? Like this is what you want as far as building that trust, because you want them to see, hey, I know what I'm talking about. I'm going to take care of you. But how do you do that in a 1-hour discovery call, which is what usually is the case, right? Like that's like the cookie cutter. This is what we do.
So in the book, there's a diversion, and I'm sure Megan, you get this, but you break up sales, right? So there's a discovery call. There's a portion of the way people mentally make a decision about trusting somebody. All right. So everybody should have that. If you don't have that, that's sort of like the table stakes here, right? Then you need to learn that first. But essentially what trust compression was looking at is, in my space, it's usually a 1 hour, 1.5 hour front meeting. Then it goes by for 2 or 3 weeks, and then a 1.5 hour, 1.5 hour, 2 hour meeting behind that. And the reason is because it's efficient for the professional. So they drive out to your house, whatever, and then they spend all this time with you. They don't want to drive out twice. But right. With the digital world, it's different. And so what we figured out was that it is not the amount of time that you spend with somebody. It is the number of interactions. Your brain, the way it decides to trust somebody or not, is based on the number of interactions, and it asks itself, was that a good interaction? Did I get something out of it? That's it. That's as far as it goes. And so what we did was we broke our appointment process up into 4 micro appointments. We do basically 20 minutes, 25 minutes of 4 of those. Well, we actually spend less time. We do it all digitally, which means we're not driving.
Right.
And every interaction, or they're spaced within a few days apart. So there's time for someone to absorb information, remember it, then go to the next step, remember it, versus 2 weeks and they don't remember 90% of what you just told them.
You got to rehash everything.
And then every time they ask themselves, was this a good interaction? Yeah, I learned something about myself, because I can say, what'd you learn about yourself today? I learned that I'm not as risk-oriented as I think I am. Oh, okay. Next, I learned that my portfolio, whatever it is that is specific to your specialty. But I think that really, really helped in building those relationships. And then if you really want to make that just like add sizzle to it or make it really good, then you do something we call bridges to gap meetings. So within each one of these half hour meetings, you know, they're like 3 or 4 days apart, we're going to send them a video that says, here's something I want to teach you about the next meeting, to make it more efficient. And then
that's good.
They're getting this constant drip on you. So they've, in a period of 6 weeks, they've probably seen us or heard from us, something like that. Probably not even 6 weeks. We can do the whole process in two, but they probably connected, watched a video from us, something six times, six, seven interactions.
Mm-hmm.
So now they have a lot. I've got a 2 or 3 year old relationship. Now I just say, this is what we should do. And they go, okay, versus, you know, having to earn my stripes each time.
Right. So that's interesting too, that you bring that up. That, so have you only done this in the virtual space, or was this also tested in the physical?
Like, yeah, we do it both ways.
Face-to-face?
Yeah, okay. We do. People come in nowadays more and more. It works both ways. You're right. In person's always better. But I just think, to me, it's crazy. There are clients on the East Coast, mm-hmm, that I'm in California. Clients in the East Coast that we, many clients, by the way, it's not one or two, many clients in the East Coast that we brought in $2-4 million and never met. And I think that is a trip. And mm-hmm, it's because of trust compression. It's because of edification. So their accountant said, these guys are awesome. Then we did the trust compression. They're like, oh, they're just great. That feedback loops. And if we really do the trust compression, I mean, the edification right, at the end, what we do is bring in the other advisor and get them to sign off on what we did. Mm. Like, we work for them. And I think then we just edified them. They go, yes, I think this is awesome. Even though, you know, they stamp like
approval
looking at it, right?
Right. Yeah, that's great. I mean, it is. It's just, it's solidifying those bonds that you have with the people that you trust too, you know, and you know that are going to take care of your clients. And I think that's so crucial, because it is hard to build up relationships, especially virtually, with other professionals that you can trust, even with your clients, let alone clients coming to you for help with their situation. Because it isn't the same as being in person with somebody and working in an office and knowing, oh man, I've seen this person day in and day out. I know they're reliable. I know I can, you know, lean on them. And it's just, I noticed it's so much harder to get that in a Zoom call, which for obvious reasons. But I thought this tactic was interesting in splitting it up between shorter meetings and having more of them.
And it's like a wheel, if you think about it, because now you've got someone who trusts you. They're 2 years in the relationship, but it's happened really fast, which means they're in love. And they're going to say, you get more referrals out of it. Now they're introducing you to their kids and their cousins. And what's neat about that is, because it's digital, I can go anywhere. Right. So I'm not based in just it's local, and it's not a one turn of the wheel. The wheel tends to spin and spin and spin and accelerate, because we're expanding we've got a lot of really happy people.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing that I wanted to touch on, I know you talked about this with Jan too in that podcast, is there is going to probably be some pushback from people that are like, I just want to meet with you once. Like, I just need to make a decision by the end of the week. Like, there's always those people that are in a rush to make mm-hmm. the decision. So how do you handle that as far as having that conversation? You know, I need to meet with you once or twice. You know, I only have time for an hour.
It's great. Well, so one, I mean, there's a bunch of ways to answer that. One is, they may not be interested in a relationship, and that may not be the client that you want. Mm-hmm. Okay. I want people who are, if this is transactional, then my mechanism specifically excludes transactional relationships. Mm-hmm. So that's one aspect.
Secondly,
yeah. So the other thing is, I haven't spent an hour and a half with them. I spent 15 minutes. Mm. So I really reduce that. I think the other thing is, a lot of times what I'll say to answer that someone's question is, look, I get it. You're excited. You want to just jump into the end. But I would be doing you a disservice if I brought you in halfway. And I found that out purely through experience. I bring people in the side door, and they're never as happy as if I brought them in the front door. Mm. So I'm going to bring you through the front door. If that fits for you, that's great. If it doesn't, that's great too. Okay. But I think you're saying to somebody, look, I you know, I could not charge you, for example, and just I figured this out with my family. We actually charge family, and it's weird, because you'd think, why would you do that? We do that because we realized that when we brought them in the side door, then we didn't treat them properly, and they didn't have mm-hmm. as good of an experience as if they just come in the front door. So it's kind of that we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, it's, it's a hard thing, I feel like, for just people that are people pleasers to set those boundaries and stay with it, because you want to just like, oh yeah, well, we could do that and we could modify things, but there's a reason for the process and there's a reason why you've set those boundaries, and sticking to those, I think, just makes it, keeps the value in what you're offering too.
Right. You know, it kind of de-edifies yourself. If you break your rules, it de-edifies yourself. Would you trust a doctor who said, look, I just need the morphine? And they go, right. Oh, okay, here. Right.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's true.
Right. Exactly. And I think, I don't know why people think that it's any different, but they wouldn't, maybe there's some people that would ask the doctor, but not as many people are going to just ask the doctor to skip to the treatment, right? Like, why do we need to talk about all the symptoms? I just need this, you know, versus with these other advice giving professions, it seems like, oh, well, I just need, just solve the problem. Well, there's a whole process before we can get to that point, you know?
Yeah.
So,
And it's a fiduciary relationship. If you're building a fiduciary relationship that you care about them, you are going to protect them, that's exactly the same relationship as a doctor. So Right. Yeah, you should have that kind of relationship.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you so much for all of the information today. I really enjoyed our conversation and I think it's very valuable in just a small component of sales. And I'm sure I could talk to you for probably 5 days broken up into like all the different avenues that we could go. But I do want to let our listeners know where they can find you. So you do have the book, A Firm Worth Building. And then if you want to let us know where we can find your referral network as well, I think that would be really helpful.
So two things I could throw out. I mean, Amazon, really easy. A Firm Worth Building, it should pop right up. The second thing, you might have to put A Firm Worth Building Watson, but I don't think there's any ones that are similar to that. The second thing that I would say is you can go to nrnamerica.com. And the book will pop up right there, actually, as you come on the site. If you are an advice-giving professional, I think, well, first of all, if you're looking for one, we've already vetted a lot of these folks. So I think that's a great place to get a resource. But secondly, I think that if you're an advice-giving professional, you should at least set up a free membership, see if that is something that fits for you. Mm-hmm. And just because you start building your network there, I think that's a great place to start.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much, Rick. It was a pleasure having you on today.
Great. Loved being here.
Thank you so much. And if you're interested in any of those links, they will be available at pjscpas.com/140140. Keep that momentum going and we will see you next time.
This has been another episode of the Cultivating Business Growth Podcast. If you found this episode helpful, please subscribe, rate, and review. Gain access to additional free resources and learning opportunities by visiting pjscpas.com/podcast.